On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to answer these questions. Are the Thunder already in perfect position to repeat next year? And what other teams could give the Thunder a run for their money next season? And lastly, what does Drew Holiday bring to the Trailblazers? All this coming up right now. Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's The Big Number. I'm Tom Haberstroh, and that's my man Dan Devine. We do this every week on Yahoo Sports, and we're finally here. Finals are over. The Oklahoma City Thunder have been crowned as champions. How you doing, Dan?
I'm doing great. I mean, I'm feeling very flowy. It's an extremely warm day here in Brooklyn, New York City. But we have a champion. We are moving into an offseason. The draft is in like 5 minutes. Free agency is about 5 minutes after that. My third eye's open. I'm expanding, thinking about Eurobasket. There's a lot happening. But right now, Tom Haberstroh, I'm ready to put up some numbers. So hit me with it. We're past the finals now. So what could possibly be the big number for this week?
Yeah, we're looking forward this week. This week's big number is plus 240. That is the odds of the Oklahoma City Thunder, according to BetMGM, the odds of OKC winning next year's championship. Mm. We're already turning the page, Dan. It's old news. Sunday might as well have been like 8 months ago. Okay. We're now flipping the page to next year, and we're looking at the BetMGM odds here. Thunder are plus 240, and the Cavs are at plus 800, the Rockets at plus 800, Knicks plus 900, and Magic, Lakers, and Wolves are tied at plus 1400 to win the title next year. And I got to say, I can go both ways on this. I'm a little surprised that the odds aren't shorter for OKC, considering we saw Tyrese Haliburton go down with the torn Achilles, Jason Tatum, of course, in Boston. We'll talk about the Drew Holiday trade later in the program. And then you got Damian Lillard, and Giannis is looking at around like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, in that empty room, just be like, who's on my team? The Thunder are at plus 240, which is an applied probability of 29%. They are not the odds-on favorite, Dan, which would mean that they were 50% or more likely to win the title. So just first blush here, looking at OKC, how do you feel about the plus 240, which would be, if it holds, the heaviest preseason favorite for a non-KD, non-Steph, non-LeBron team since the 2010 Lakers? So yes, they are a heavy favorite, but also still just a 29% implied odds of winning it all next year.
Yeah, so like if it's OKC versus the field is the heavy favorite. But then if you look at the sub-segmented out, the slices are a lot thinner of that pie in Oklahoma City, more than a quarter of it. I think it accurately represents the position the Thunder find themselves in heading out of that finals. Obviously, dominant regular season, got stent the distance in two series against Denver and against Indiana, but the defense not only held, was even more elite in the postseason in terms of the way they generated turnovers and the way they got stops and the way they would just strangle opposing teams' offenses. They come out of it healthy, which obviously, that's not the case for a lot of these teams, as you mentioned, with Tyrese Haliburton and Jason Tatum and Damian Lillard and the chaos in the East. They come out of it with, I think, pretty much the entirety of their rotation still under contract, still the arrow ticking up on them. They're going to be able to integrate in Nikola Topic, their lottery pick from the 2024 NBA draft, who many projected as being like a top five caliber talent before he got injured, and then Thunder able to scoop him up. I saw him, I was doing the shoot arounds and the practice sessions there. Like, he's working in on all that stuff with Oklahoma City. They're really high on him moving forward.
It's unfair, man. It's unfair.
Yeah. It's crazy. And then, pick they're going to middle of the first round pick they're going to be able to add this year and so on and so forth. So like, it doesn't seem like they're on the path to losing anything dramatic from this season. They have the MVP of the league still on the upper trajectory. They have an all NBA player in Jalen Williams on the upper trajectory, and multiple all defensive caliber players. Chet Holmgren, the arrow still ticking up. Alex Caruso, you can manage his minutes. Lou Dort, the whole gang is sort of everybody. The arrow is going up. So I think you're right to say, like, if there's a surprise here, it's that it's not a bigger, favorite at this point. But I think that also might reflect just what we've seen in terms of how quickly it can all kind of turn around. because we said, you know, we were saying similar things for Denver after they won the title. And it's like they're bringing back that whole starting five, how young Jokic and Murray are. You know, they're going to be, you know, on the rampage for years. And the Celtics, obviously, we said, you know, this is the start of something rather than the end of something. Things can change awfully quickly. And certainly we're all crossing our fingers that nothing like that happens for Oklahoma City. But I think that it seems like the hedge there is just like, you can't say that they're like the odds on favorite, given how dramatically one thing can change everything.
Yeah. I mean, the youth on this team, I wrote about it this week in the aftermath of the championship. I mean, I don't know how teams can watch the NBA finals and see how they outlasted the Indiana Pacers, beat them at their own game, playing speedball. They beat Denver with a totally different style of play, Minnesota, different style of play. And they kind of are this team that can wear a bunch of different hats and still beat you at whatever game you want to play. If you want to go big, they can go big with Isaiah Hartenstein, Jalen Williams, and Chet Holmgren. If you go small, they can go Jalen Williams at the five, and they don't really miss much of a beat. And they've got all of these amazing defenders. And hey, let's take a victory lap on that. Like the second episode of the Big Number this year, we were just campaigning on how good this defense was. The OKC Dobermans that were just like dogs out there, vicious, ferocious, and the way that they totally upended the Tyrese Haliburton, Pascal Siakam, the attack that they had in game seven. Things kind of, when Tyrese Haliburton, when he got hurt, things completely changed. And it was because of that crazy defense. TJ McConnell having a career high seven turnovers. And I felt bad for him because it's just like, he's looking around being like, I need some help. But his guy, Halley, was in the locker room dealing with a devastating injury at the most devastating time. So it was a thing that I think because of Tyrese Haliburton's injury, it dampens what they did in winning this championship. But it doesn't take away from the fact that they won the NBA championship. They were, 16-7 in the postseason. Their defense was about 7 points better than league average, which is up there with the best defenses we've seen in NBA history in the postseason for any champion. And they got room to get better. Right, Dan? So Chet Holmgren, he's 23. You got Lou Dort, who's 26. You have J-Dub, who's 24. Topic is 19, okay? So I could see a scenario in which the Oklahoma City Thunder are the best point differential team in NBA history. They just outscored opponents by 1,247 points, postseason included. Number. That's a huge number. The biggest number we've seen in that category for any team. They won 68 games in the regular season, another 16. There's only two other teams that won more games. They won 84 games. There's only two teams that won more games in the entirety of the season. So, like, if you want to say they're the odds-on favorite going into next season, giving all of the horrendous injuries in the Eastern Conference, I can't disagree with you. Like, I can't look at this Thunder team and honestly say that there's a team nipping at their heels next year. Because the only team, and we'll get into this, that I feel like is right there with every other team in that kind of second tier, the Houston Rockets, they were a first round out this year.
Yeah.
So they'd have to win not just one more series, not just two more series, but three more series to upend the Golden State Warriors and win the championship next year. So that's what we're going to do here. We're going to get into, Dan, our four favorites to win the title if it's not OKC. And it's early. We've got the draft coming up on Tuesday night or on Wednesday night. We've got another round of free agency where more deals can happen. But I just want to look at next year and kind of peg an early flag, plant an early flag on some of these teams to get people their bearings heading into this offseason. Because OKC, man, they're so fast. They're so young. And I wouldn't be surprised if they won 70 games next year. They lost Chet for half the season. And
that's
they won 68.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, I mean, Chet played 32 games during the regular season. Isaiah Hartenstein played 57 games. Caruso played 54. So, like, there is a possibility that some regression or, I guess, progression in terms of their injury luck puts them in an even higher tax bracket. So it's a wild thing to consider, but that's the bar. And then all these other teams are looking to clear it. And yeah, we'll get into, you know, how some teams maybe are trying to do that and what the likelihood is that they're going to be able to clear it.
Yeah. And just real quick on OKC, I wouldn't be surprised if they got like a top six pick in this draft.
Now remind me how
they got Topic. They got Topic. They've got the 15, the 24, and the 44. And if you flaunt that to a team that is looking to add more depth and they don't love the top five or top six, they can move up from 15. They can move up even closer if they put Topic on the table. They can move into the top 10 theoretically without giving up a single player who played in the NBA finals. You know, like,
it's nuts.
Think about that. And there's reports from the Steinline. Jake Fisher and the Steinline are also reporting that there were talks between Phoenix and OKC at the 10 spot, like exploratory talks exploratory talks with Houston, who originally owned the pick before they sent it to Phoenix in the Kevin Durant trade. And so the fact that like OKC was kicking the tires on the number 10 pick, I think we need to be realistic here and understand that Oklahoma City Thunder can package like two first round picks, future first round picks. They're 15, they're 24, they're 44, and Topic. And I think teams would listen. I think a lot of teams would listen. Totally. Be like, okay, I mean, we get what was last year one of the top picks in Topic before he tore his ACL, and we get like three more first round picks. I think teams are going to listen. So watch out for OKC making a big move. Ooh. On draft night. So moving aside from the Thunder and a championship well-deserved, well-earned, no asterisks on it, I think the Thunder should very much enjoy this championship parade that is happening as we speak. And coming up after the break, Dan, we're going to talk about our four favorites. One by one, we'll go through them. Our four favorite non-OKC teams to win the championship next year. As of now, the Thunder are at plus 240, a 29% chance to win it all. Do we see anyone take them down? Stay tuned. All right, Dan, this week's big number, plus 240. Those are the odds, according to BetMGM, for the Thunder to win the championship next year. And there's some others that are kind of in this like second tier. We're going to talk about Drew Holiday and the Anthony Simons trade later in the show. But first, what is your first little number with your favorite team, if it's not OKC, to win it all next year?
First little number this week is 0.84. That's how many points per possession the Houston Rockets scored in isolation last season, according to our friends at Synergy Sports. Only four teams were less productive than that when they finished plays going one-on-one. That was the Atlanta Hawks, New Orleans Pelicans, Washington Wizards, and Toronto Raptors, which is not the neighborhood you want to be in if you're talking about generating elite offense. So how do you solve that kind of problem when you're like, we're not really good at one-on-one scoring and we're a playoff team. And we, you know, when you get to the postseason, you're going to need to create one-on-one. How about you go get Kevin Durant, who was literally the most efficient isolation scorer in the entire NBA last season among guys who finished at least 75 ISOs and has been, you know, at or around that era, that region of eliteness in isolation scoring for, I don't know, 12 years, 13 years, something like that. So the Rockets last season, they were just outside the top 10 in offensive efficiency outside of garbage time, according to Cleaning the Glass. But a lot of that is offensive rebounding. It's the way their defense generates transition opportunities. They were 22nd in half court scoring. And what do you do when all that dries up? The answer now is you give it to Kevin Durant. So, Tom, I'm interested to hear what you think about how adding Kevin Durant at the cost of Jalen Green, who, you know, there's a lot to like about Jalen Green, but also he had the worst on-court, off-court differential of any player on the Rockets rotation last year. And Dylan Brooks, who, important defensive player, but they also got Amen Thompson and Tari Eason to guard on the wing. The 10th pick in this week's draft and five future second rounders. Where does that put Houston in the pecking order here as you look forward to next season?
Yeah, this trade for KD was a highway robbery. I mean, they basically gave up Jalen Green, who was 23 years old, didn't match what they needed in the half court. Again, like you said, their half court offense, when they weren't getting out in transition, Amen Thompson wasn't doing the Kawhi flubber, the flubber Kawhi stuff that we called it earlier this year. when they didn't have that, things got bogged down, and now they got Kevin Durant, who's as efficient of a scorer, who can shoot over the top of the defense at any point. You give him the ball and he's going to be a really high quality look. They got Kevin Durant for basically like a young, unpolished player in Jalen Green and a stud 3-and-D guy, but they also have a lot of those defenders.
Yeah.
A lot of defenders that remind me of OKC and their slew of defenders, elite defenders in Tari Eason and Amen Thompson. So I really feel like they took a surplus, right? They've got an elite fleet of defenders and they gave one of those guys up. So the opportunity cost isn't huge for them. And they didn't give up a future first round pick. The number 10 pick, we saw that Reed Sheppard was buried on that bench this season. Right. Houston, I think, looks at this and says, I think we just added a whole bunch of stuff without really subtracting much at all. Dylan Brooks is a much better three-point shooter than Amen Thompson and Tari Eason have shown up until this point, but they're young and they can develop into that. And I do think when you have Kevin Durant on your team, that actually makes a lot more open shots and a lot of better off-ball cuts. He's more willing passer than Jalen Green is. And I think this is an outstanding move for the Houston Rockets, where it's like, I don't think that they are on the same tier as OKC, but I love them as the second best team in the NBA next season. They were a first round out to the Golden State Warriors. A lot of that, I think, can be owed to Jalen Green, a guy that had 38 points in one game and then averaged 9 in the other games. That's not what you need. That kind of inconsistency of a 23-year-old is not what Houston needs. And so they need someone, kind of a metronome, someone to stabilize the offense. Fred VanVleet was that at times, but they just got one of the best ones ever to pick up a basketball. So Dan, in the postseason, they scored 92 points every 100 plays in the half court, which was the 12th ranked among playoff teams. So there's 16 teams in the playoffs. So when you're trying to win a championship and you have a 12th ranked out of 16 in half court offense, not great. Not great, Bob. So I'm taking OKC next year, hand over fist, like making sure that I don't lend you to think that I think Houston's on the same tier, but I have them better than any East team coming out of next year, and I have them better than any West team. I think they're going to be that number 2 seed again next year. And one thing I do love, Dan, I think that they can ease Kevin Durant's minutes with Jabari Smith, with Amen Thompson, Alpi Shangoon. I think even Reed Sheppard is going to be able to float that offense a lot more than what you saw in Phoenix, where it was like, if they didn't have Devin Booker on the floor, KD just had to do so much for them. And so I think this team is going to be really good next year. And plus 800 from BetMGM, that feels a little long to me. I would say they're closer to plus 600, especially if they can guarantee that Kevin Durant will be healthy next year. I know that's a big if, but sure. I like the Houston Rockets next year.
Yeah, a ton to like about a 50-win team that their biggest problem was scoring efficiently in the half court, adding one of the greatest half court scorers in the history of the game. So pretty good deal there. On to our second little number, 81.7%. That was the Cleveland Cavaliers winning percentage last season against teams that were not the Indiana Pacers. The Cavs went 64-18 during the regular season and 5-4 in the playoffs. So 69-22 overall. They went 2-7 against the Indiana Pacers, 1-3 in the regular season. And then, as you might remember, 1-4 in the second round of the postseason, a series marked by Tyrese Halliburton's incredible game-winning three-pointer, the step back after the offensive rebound on the missed free throw, and also injuries to Darius Garland and Evan Mobley and DeAndre Hunter, and then even eventually to Donovan Mitchell. Well, Tyrese Halliburton's likely to miss all of next season. And so, as you mentioned earlier, are Jason Tatum and Damian Lillard. And the Knicks fired their head coach and don't have one anymore. And so the Cavs are looking around at the chaos in the Eastern Conference, and they're positioned to bring back 8 of their top 10. They still, you know, TBD on Ty Jerome and Sam Merrill. They're unrestricted free agents. We'll see. They were the East's number one seed. They look like they've got a pretty clear pathway in front of them now. And like maybe a few weeks ago, we thought they had to do some dramatic restructuring. And then the way that the last few weeks have worked out has worked out. And so I think you mentioned earlier the odds at this point, plus 800. I believe that's the best of any team in the East. What do we make of the Cavs in this dramatically reshaped landscape as a potential team to make a leap here?
I mean, if something happens to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander next year, maybe they have a shot. Like, it just feels like they're going to need something to go their way, because that backcourt just can't defend at the level that I think they need to win the NBA championship. That was very
clear.
And
we should say Darius Garland is probably going to miss the start of the season as he's recovering from toe surgery. So we'll see when he gets back, in what state he does, what the beginning of the season looks like for Cleveland, et cetera.
Exactly. So they're not going to get off on the right foot anyway to start next season. I think when you look at this roster, it seems like it has a lot of upside with Evan Mobley still entering his prime and Darius Garland, same thing, Donovan Mitchell in his prime. You would think that this is a young up and coming team that should be able to contend with OKC, but they just need more two-way players. Like, Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland can score with the best of them when healthy, but they have to get some more, I guess, dogs out there. They need some guys, point of attack defenders, that can help them get across the finish line. And they also need their health. This is the second year in a row that in the postseason, yeah, they came up short, but a lot of it was because of injuries, right? Like, of all the teams in the postseason that can look at, all right, well, we didn't have our guys healthy in this season, and they didn't have catastrophic, devastating injuries like a lot of their East counterparts. I do think you can look at the Cavs and say, all right, if they are healthy and they don't have Darius Garland hurt and they don't have Jared Allen hurt, which he was 2 years ago, and if they don't have Donovan Mitchell hurt, like, then we can reevaluate. I can see them holding this team together and saying, we want one more shot with this crew. If they're healthy and they still come up short, then maybe we consider some wholesale changes. But I wouldn't be surprised, Dan, if they decide to move Darius Garland and to try to get some help defensively at the point of attack and try to kind of ease some of that offensive upside, the best offense in the regular season, and maybe try to figure out how to balance this roster a little bit more, Dan. I don't know what the trade is exactly, but like, would it be crazy if the Miami Heat and the Cleveland Cavaliers, I feel like a guy like Davion Mitchell, to get the Donovan and Davion matchup together in the backcourt, something to help them ease how one-sided that backcourt is. Because as you saw with Nembhard and with Nesmith and with all the guys on OKC, you have to have two-way guys, guys that can hit shots, move the ball, and defend at a high level. And I just don't know if Cleveland has that right now. But that's why they're at plus 800 and not higher with all the injuries in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, we've shouted him out multiple times on this show, but Owen Phillips at the newsletter, the F5, that idea of the weak link era of the NBA and the notion of, is it worth more to sort of accentuate your highest strength or like try to mitigate your lowest, your weakest points, especially on the defensive end? You need a roster where you can't pick on anybody. And Darius Garland has been under the microscope there before in the postseason.
I'm with you. Cleveland is number two on my list. So I got Houston, Cleveland, and I think we're going to differ here on number three. So what do you got as your number three most likely to win if it isn't the Oklahoma City Thunder?
Our third little number this week is 27-8. So I guess that's two little numbers technically, but we're incorrigible. So we're going to shove that in there. 27-8 was the Warriors' record, regular season and playoffs combined, when Stephen Curry and Jimmy Butler played together.
Yes.
And I think we forget a little bit. 27-8 is a .771 winning percentage, which works out to a 63 win clip over an 82 game sample. Pretty good. We've talked about it a ton on this show since the Jimmy trade, over the course of the second half of the season into the postseason. The Jimmy trade has like fundamentally transformed who the Warriors were in the middle of the season, took them from a 10 seed to like a near 50 win team that made the play-in, that advanced out of the play-in, that won a playoff series, and that was looking really good in the beginning of that series against the Minnesota Timberwolves until Steph Curry pulled up lame with the hamstring ailment that kept him out for the rest of the series and submarined their chances. But now you look at this, they have the proof of concept of what the team looks like after you add Jimmy Butler to Stephen Curry and Draymond Green. You've got a full offseason to sort of, for Steve Kerr and that staff to orient what that needs to look like. You've got a handful of semi-interesting-ish young guys around them with Brandon Pajemski and Moses Moody, Quentin Post, Gee Santos, Trace Jackson Davis, like guys that all kind of add a little bit of sprinkle of spice here and there in, you know, on one side of the ball or both sides of the ball to that crew. Got a lot of flexibility under the aprons. You can maybe use the full tax with the full middle level exception, biannual exception there to add some talent. There's the big question of like Jonathan Kuminga's restricted free agency. Is he a sign and trade chip? Do you bring him back? How do you evolve? The point generally being like there, we have evidence that this is really good and they're going off. Like the last I saw was like plus 2,500. And so I'm
plus 2,500. Yeah, they're like the 12th most likely team to win the championship next year. I think that's crazy. They're, right? They're number three on my list too, dude.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, okay,
I love
cool.
Golden State right. at this value. Like, you're not being out of left field here. I'm right there with you. So it goes Thunder, Cavs, Rockets. This is according to BetMGM. Rockets, Knicks, and then there's a three-way tie with the Magic, Lakers, and the Wolves at plus 1,400. The Nuggets at plus 1,600. The Celtics, after the Drew trade,
right,
plus 1,700. And then you get to the Warriors at plus 2,500. So, like, this is a team that was just in the Western Conference Finals, beat the Houston Rockets, and who knows what happens with the Jonathan Kuminga trade? You said it. Like, they have a 60-win pace with those big three on the floor for them in uniform. This is a team that I feel like has a very high ceiling and a very low floor. Like, right. A lot can go wrong for the Warriors at that age when your core is made up of guys who are 35, 36, 37 years old and have had multiple runs to the NBA finals. A lot of not much tread left on those tires. But if Kuminga either A, develops into the piece that they need, that they can trust him to play within the offense and be that athleticism that they so need on the team, or some other team sees that, if it's New Orleans, if it's Miami, if it's Brooklyn, if it's Toronto, like all these teams that are looking for a kind of a star player to build around, a young star. I think these odds are crazy. The Warriors at plus 2,500. I just feel like with this team and the way that, like think about it. If you're New Orleans and you've got a new front office in place with Joe Dumars, and they're looking at this and saying, we want a fresh start here. I could see like the Warriors being like, all right, we need some athleticism, some guys to go downhill. Kuminga, Zion Williamson, figure out some way to trade for Zion. Or, hey, let's get Herb Jones and get him in here. And they say, all right, we need some defense. We need some guys who can play 3-and-D for them. I just feel like there's a lot of interesting pieces that Kuminga could be traded for. I don't know how I feel about Vooch. I'm still like, I said at the deadline last year, wouldn't be surprised if like Vooch and Chicago traded for Kuminga. Maybe that's the deal. I would be stunned if Coby White is in a deal for Jonathan Kuminga, but maybe Chicago, they traded Alex Caruso to the now champs Oklahoma City Thunder without getting a pick for Josh Giddey. Maybe that happens, but I just think that the Golden State Warriors, they're kind of a sleeping giant here in the Western Conference. I think if Steph Curry doesn't have to have that quick turnaround after game 7 of Houston, he doesn't hurt his hamstring. I'm not saying they win that series. I'm just saying I think people would be thinking a lot differently about the Warriors' chances going into next year if we didn't see them play, three games in 5 nights.
Totally. The last impression we have of the Warriors is that the final four games of their season came without Stephen Curry, and the entire team is built around what it is with Stephen Curry on the floor. So like we have our most recent impression of them is, I think, dramatically below what they looked like when they were all on the court together. And I do understand the general feeling of like this entire thing is built around three guys on the wrong side of 35. And so I understand like exercise caution in terms of where the odds are. That might be a bit too much caution for what this iteration of the team looks like, especially if Mike Dunleavy Jr. and that front office are able to add some more talent around, you know, use that Kuminga chip or, you know, whatever other options are available to them to buttress around it. Because like the Jimmy trade showed, we're going for it. Like this is not, there's one timeline. It's the one sacred timeline now, and this is it. So, you know, do what you can to maximize it. For the fourth and final little number this week, I want to go back to a team you just mentioned. Our fourth and final little number is 250. That's how many games the Knicks won, regular season and playoffs combined, since Tom Thibodeau took over in 2020. 250 wins, nice round number. The only coaches with more wins in that span, Steve Kerr of the Warriors, as we just mentioned, and Michael Malone of the Denver Nuggets, who shares something in common with Tom Thibodeau, which is that neither one of them are coaching the team that they led to all those wins anymore. Tom Thibodeau, as you might remember, got shown the door by the Knicks after bowing out in the Eastern Conference Finals to the Indiana Pacers. 3 weeks later, the Knicks still do not have a head coach, although judging by the reporting of all the guys they tried to get permission to interview, it's not through lack of trying. Including most recent word I saw Tuesday morning was that they've interviewed Mike Anori, the well-regarded assistant from the Minnesota Timberwolves, who was the head of the offense while Karl Anthony Towns was there, which is kind of interesting. Here's the thing, though. They don't have a coach. They do have Jalen Brunson, Karl Anthony Towns, OG Anunoby, Mikal Bridges, Josh Hart, Mitchell Robinson, and Deuce McBride all under contract. So like a legit top seven of a Eastern Conference finalist rotation. They'll probably be a pretty attractive destination for Vita Vegemin. They'll probably be an attractive destination for veteran minimum free agents because, you know, it's New York and you've got a team that's probably ready to make a big playoff run again. They stand to benefit from all that injury chaos atop the East, too. So, like, how do you handicap the team looks like a Final Four contender and they don't have a coach? Like, how do you where do you put them at this point? I think that's pretty interesting.
It is, and we don't have Jason Kidd an extension out of Dallas yet, so
interesting.
Like, I don't think we've closed the door on the whole weird flirting between the courtship between the two and Jason Kidd and New York. And like, yes, Dallas denied that permission to interview and bring in Jason Kidd. But like, until that ink goes to paper on an extension, I just think that like, I'm not willing to close the door on Jason Kidd coaching the New York Knicks next year. So the Knicks are at plus 900. They're the fourth shortest odds to win the championship next year. The Magic are tied for fifth at plus 1400, along with the Lakers and Wolves. Magic are interesting. They do kind of play this bully ball, and they did get one of the best 3-and-D guys in the league in Desmond Bane, a guy who's one of the best 3-point shooters in the NBA in Desmond Bane. Also getting, hopefully, a healthy Jalen Suggs back. And I think they still have a couple moves up their sleeves this offseason. I wouldn't count them out. I just feel like the Knicks are a little bit above them on the pecking order. I agree with this, kind of slotting them, the Knicks, even without a head coach. Maybe there's a plan here.
It just feels nuts, but I mean, it's wild. It's really, really wild.
And then what happens with Rick Brunson? You know, it's super awkward because whoever's going to be hired for the Knicks job is probably going to have to hire onto his bench Rick Brunson, Jalen Brunson's father. And I just, it's an awkward fit. Maybe that's one of the reasons why we haven't seen the New York Knicks hire a head coach after stunning everybody by firing Tom Thibodeau just hours after their playoff run to the Eastern Conference Finals. You could talk me into the Knicks being undervalued here and also overrated here at plus 900. The team I'm looking at, I know this seems kind of mainstream here. I think the Lakers are really interesting next year, John.
Okay, see, they were almost the fourth little number for me because I am also. Tell me why. I'm with you, I think, but I want to hear your argument.
Skinny Luka, like if Luka's in shape, we're getting lots of rumblings and reports that he's actually gonna get in shape this time. He seems committed to the Lakers with that tweet. Once they were sold to Mark Walter and he was saying like, I want to win multiple championships. I just feel like their ability to get a healthy Luka back, LeBron is, you know, he's still playing at a high level. But I also think that the Dallas Mavericks signing an extension with Daniel Gafford for under the amount, according to the Steinline, again, just great reporting here, that the extension for Daniel Gafford that they just agreed to is actually a little bit below what it would mean that they would have a trade restriction attached to Daniel Gafford.
Yes,
that
right.
seems to me on purpose, is that they have some optionality with Daniel Gafford. And wouldn't it be just poetic if they traded Daniel Gafford? Like, yep, you know what? Take Daniel Gafford too. Like, I'll trade Luka Doncic in last year, and then this a couple months later, we'll trade you Daniel Gafford. Or Kristaps Porzingis is also a guy that I'm looking at for the Lakers. It feels like if they get either of those two guys on the Lakers, where they had a huge hole at the center position in Jackson Hayes, and they basically, J.J. Redick was like, I'm going small for 48 minutes because I don't have anybody else to play at the five. Yeah. But if they get KP or Daniel Gafford, or for that matter, Derek Lively, I think is more likely to be traded now than he was yesterday, given that Daniel Gafford is signed to an extension. I could see Dallas Mavericks moving either of those two guys over to the Lakers. So Dan, like Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively, like I feel like one of those guys could be moved from the Dallas Mavericks now, this week even. And Austin Reeves, we'll see if he's a Laker next year, but I think that deal for both sides could be interesting. Why did they do that deal before? I don't know, but I feel like the Lakers are kind of underrated here with a motivated, skinny Luka potentially going into next year. I like the Lakers odds in a very high ceiling. It's the Western Conference, so it seems crazy to go with the fourth slot here going with the Lakers, but I just feel like, man, the Lakers have some upside here.
Yeah, I mean, the argument would be it's essentially like the after the first finals run for the Heat, right? Where it's like you give them an offseason to retrofit the roster a little more, add one or two pieces that, you know, that better balance the roster, that, you know, round out the rotation. And then that second version of the team is going to look a heck of a lot better than the first version. And obviously, you know, in the Miami situation, that leads to, you know, you bring in Shane Battier and Mike Miller, and then like that team kind of is off to the races and the style of play. But in this case, getting Luka a center, I think is the idea of it being either Gafford or, you know, Gafford Lively or Kristaps, like, you know, the ghosts of Luka past, right? You know, the partnerships past, like,
I forgot about the KP thing. Yeah,
it's either your pop big to have you five out, or your role big to be able to get those lobs off. And like, I think we've seen the role big has been the better benefit for Luka in terms of getting his game off. And you know, although when they had KP under Rick Carlisle, that was like the most efficient offense in NBA history to that point. So two, you know, multiple ways to skin a cat and, you know, great, get great offense out of it. But yeah, like looking at it and saying, you bring back Luka alongside LeBron with the you know, sort of switchable wings they've got around there. They can play those sort of smaller five out lineups. There was a lot of value in that. The Lakers, also because of the like staggered like LeBron injury, and you know Luka didn't play the first few games they got there, they didn't get like a full runway for what that could look like toward the end of the season. I get where you're coming from. It does feel really heavily dependent though on, do you nail that center move? Do you, and where does the complementary ball handling come from if Reeves goes out? And then, you know, like Dorian Finney-Smith is going to be, you know, they're going to have to figure out what they do with it in terms of extending him or moving on from him. Like there's stuff to figure out, but you do have the starting point of Luka, LeBron, Reeves as a piece to move around. There's a lot to like there. But yeah, that's talking through this. It's so wild to think like, yeah, we're hours relatively removed from the Thunder winning the NBA championship. We are broadcasting in the middle of their parade and the entire rest of the league is just like loading up to figure out how to knock them off the top of the mountain. Yeah, it doesn't stop. It just does not stop. And, you know, who knows what kind of conversations we'll be having about what these rosters look like in a couple of days once we're on the draft, in a week and a half when free agency is going. Like, yeah, it's, everything is going to look a lot different before we get a sense of what the lay of the land looks like come September.
I think the Thunder win it next year. I think they do.
We haven't had a repeat champion in what? This would be the eighth year. So, I mean, it's bucking a trend. You know, we've moved toward parity in Adam Silver's NBA. But, man, if anybody's positioned to do it, it does feel like this Thunder team. Although, you know, we've said that before and look where it's landed us.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the youngest champion in 50 years. The best defense by a mile in the NBA. And then I feel like Chet Holmgren could be the second best player on this team next year with his development on the offensive end, just his first full season and not really a full season. Like, I guess if you combine the postseason, he played about 50 games this year, but I just think man, they've got so much more room for improvement. Like, I think we're at the doorstep of a dynasty with this team. So I think it is OKC.
Unless the Knicks ask the Pacers for permission to interview Rick Carlisle. And then we get the whole musical chairs moving around and we see if you can't beat him, get him to join. Maybe that's the idea.
Well, Rick C, we did the Jay-Z Big Pimpin' right. remix. Rick C, bring him back to New York. Come on.
Oh my goodness.
In New York.
Concrete jungle where dreams are made of.
We had to do it.
We had to.
Before the season officially ends, we had to do a little bit more singing for everybody. All right. We're going to talk Drew Holiday and Anthony Simons coming up after the break. Dan, we have a trade. Overnight, my phone was blowing up because as a New Englander who does work for the Blazers, this was right in my wheelhouse. A lot of people were very confused about this trade. Drew Holiday is being traded from the Boston Celtics to the Portland Trailblazers for Anthony Simons and two future second round picks, the 2030 Knicks second rounder and the Blazers' own 2031 second rounder going to Boston into the deal. It took me a while to kind of wrap my head around this one, Dan, to be honest, because it didn't seem like any rumblings of a reunion with Drew Holiday after the Blazers acquired Drew Holiday in the Damian Lillard trade and then flipped him again to Boston and then for Malcolm Brogdon. And then they flipped Malcolm Brogdon and a couple firsts over for Denny Avdija. So this is full circle in many ways for the Blazers to reacquire Uncle Drew. And I think that's the way I'm thinking about it from the Blazers side is Uncle Drew is like Drew Holiday is this amazing, beloved teammate for Scoot Henderson and Shaedon Sharpe. That backcourt was really struggling to defend at a high level in the second half of last season when Chauncey Billups made the switch January 19th to move Shaedon Sharpe out of the starting lineup. Some of that was because he needed better defense in the backcourt. It's one thing to have one guy and who's not a plus defender in the backcourt in Anthony Simons, but it's tough to have two of those. And so now they get Drew Holiday, who's one of the best, if not the best perimeter defender over the last few years. And he is coming in at 35 years old. He just celebrated his 35th birthday. But like we've seen this before with young teams that are trying to make it with a young team that you get a guy who's a floor general like Drew Holiday. We look at Fred VanVleet with the Houston Rockets and you look with Pat Bev with the Minnesota Timberwolves a few years back. And even if you want to go back even further in 2020 with Chris Paul and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander with OKC, there is reason to believe that there are much better things coming forward for Portland, not just on-court stuff, but also veteran leadership in Drew Holiday.
Yeah. So to me, I think the thing that jumped off the page right away was like, wait a second. The Blazers gave up 2 second round picks and the younger guy to get Drew Holiday, who has like $104 million still coming to him over the next few years. So I think like that's the part that I think a lot of people are kind of stuck on. Like why like the Blazers were 10 games under 500 last year. They were not even like in the play-in mix. Why would they make that kind of move? And I think that the way to think about it is like the Blazers are at a point where they haven't been good in 5 years, right? Like they have not been haven't sniffed 500 since 2021, haven't won a playoff series in I think 6 or 7 years at this point. And they're coming to decision points on some of their younger guys, right? Like you mentioned Shaedon Sharpe, I believe extension eligible this summer, or if not this summer, the next. Scoot Henderson, same, like extension eligible next summer. And those guys are both younger than Anthony Simons, and they are still under team control for longer with decisions coming. Anthony Simons entering the last season of his extension this year. And what we know is like, all right, he's not, there's a lot of really good things about Anthony Simons. And I want to get back to that in terms of him in Boston in a second, but like, he's not quite a point guard, like a lead on ball creator, right? For your full-time offense to be a good offense. He has been, by a variety of metrics, including estimated plus minus, so Taylor Snar's metric at dunks and threes, one of the worst defenders in the league several years, like a consistent negative, net negative there. for a team that is now like looking to build through its defense. This felt like an opportunity to say, like, we create some runway for two guys we need more information about to make decisions like next summer or the next year to see what they can be. And we move one of our more damaging players off to the side to see if what we were last season, where we were like a top five defense for the last half of the season, if that can be real enough to be competitive and like take a shot at being good. Maybe like this is I'm getting old, but I'm like, shouts out to trying to take a shot at being good. Like, yeah, I understand the general idea of like, this does not necessarily get the Blazers to a championship, right? But like, if you haven't been good in a while and you just extended your coach, you just extended your you know, lead executive and Joe Cronin, you are a franchise that is for sale. And there's like, you know, like, but you, there's something maybe to be excited about, like try to lean into that and see how good you can get. I think there's something to be said for that. And I think Drew Holiday as that mentor figure, you know, other examples like Mike Conley in Minnesota too, right? Like, or you know, Chris Paul in San Antonio, like that obviously has not turned into a playoff team yet, but like developing the growth for those young guys, showing them how to be that floor general, be the leader on the floor, get you organized, and also what it takes to defend at a high level night after night at the backcourt positions. Like, you maybe you remove the weakest link, you provide a developmental roadmap for some of these young guys. Like, I don't hate it.
I'll tell you one thing, Dan. No one's going to want to go full court against Tomani Kamara and Drew Holiday. Like, they are going to be so hard to dribble up the floor. Like, they were already, the Blazers were already just one of the best in 24 second violations forced and 8 second violations forced last year. They were leading the league oftentimes with picking up full court with Tomani Kamara and Scoot Henderson. And now you got Drew Holiday, one of the best at doing this and hounding ball handlers. It's going to be hell going against the Blazers defense this upcoming season, right? And this is kind of the prototype.
What were we talking about all throughout the playoffs and the finals, right? Like the idea of an advancing style of play that the Indiana Pacers were showing you, that with Lu Dort picking up full court, that the Thunder were showing you. Like, I'm not saying that the Blazers are going to vault right into that, but like, this is a move you make to say like, our identity is going to be stress you out 48 minutes, 94 feet, right?
Yes.
And like,
yes,
with, you know, Donovan Clingan, you know, heading into year two as a rim protector behind it, with Denny Avdia, Jeremy Grant, like big wings, big forwards who can switch and defend across multiple positions. Matisse Thybulle, who, you know, has injuries and has difficulty staying on the court, but like is a really, you know, can be an impactful perimeter defender, switchable across positions, picking up full court. Like, you're seeing a style develop here. And I think there's worse ways to build out your roster in 2025.
Yeah. And I will say this, it's going to be, In 27-28, Drew Holiday has a player option for $37 million when he's going to be 37 years old. I expect him to pick that up, but also that will be a trade chip. Like, if the Blazers decide in a couple of years they want to swing big for a player, you're going to need a contract that will fit that slot in order to match salaries. So there is value in taking a guy who's a great locker room guy, maybe the best locker room guy in the NBA,
universally
Holiday. Universally. If you get that guy and to basically tutor Scoot Henderson, who's still super young, you know, came into the NBA as a teenager, and same thing with Shaedon Sharpe. Like, Shaedon Sharpe is super young as well. To have Drew Holiday be basically your mentor, and then, yeah, in a couple of years at 37 years old, might not be the same player that he is right now, but he's still a good player. And I think he fits exactly what Chauncey Billups loves to do, is play extremely hard defense, 94 feet, exactly what the Indiana Pacers and the Oklahoma City we just saw do in the NBA Finals. The Blazers were doing that. The Blazers were picking up full court with Tomani Kamara, and now you get Drew Holiday. They were a top five defense in the second half of the year. And one thing that I always remember about Joe Cronin a year ago was talking about this past season, looking ahead for this past season, he wanted to get data. He wanted to see what Anfernee Simons, Scoot Henderson, Shaedon Sharpe, what they were together, because there just were so many injuries the year before. They just didn't know what they had in that young backcourt. What they had last season with Shaedon Sharpe and Anfernee Simons, their backcourt of the future, so to speak, was 21st percentile on defense when they were on the floor, giving up 119 points every 100 possessions, according to cleaningtheglass.com. But more interesting to me, their offense was 17th percentile as well. So if you're going to take away defensively and if you're going to sacrifice your defense, you better make it up on the other end of the floor. And it just didn't click with Anfernee Simons and Shaedon Sharpe as much as you would have hoped for. And so I think that was probably a little bit of a motivator too in this deal is like, look, if we're not getting that elite offense with Anfernee Simons and that synergy with Shaedon Sharpe, maybe we try to get Drew Holiday to kind of double down on the defensive end where it's just really hard in today's NBA. And your weak link theory from Owen Phillips at F5, it's going to be really tough to have two of those guys on the floor at the same time in Shaedon Sharpe and Anfernee Simons. So the more that I thought about it, this made a lot of sense to me if you're Portland, and that's probably me being biased because I'm on the broadcast for them.
Total shill.
But I mean, 29-year-old Fred VanVleet joining the Houston Rockets. They went from a 22-win team to a 41-win team to the number two seed in the Western Conference. Pat Bev joined a 23-win team for the Minnesota Timberwolves. And of course, Mike Conley again later developed them into a Western Conference powerhouse alongside Anthony Edwards. The Blazers don't have an Anthony Edwards right now. They don't have an Amen Thompson kind of Alpi Shangoon kind of core yet. But Denny Abdia, I think, has the upside of being an all-star next season. He was playing at an all-star level in the second half of next year. And now with the leadership and mentorship of Drew Holiday, and you get Rob Williams III in there as well, I just think that locker room is vastly improved. What are your thoughts on the Boston side of things? Because right now, Anfernee Simons is a $28 million expiring contract for the Boston Celtics. They shaved about $5 million off of the cap, but that translates to about $40 million in luxury tax payments. They're still not below the second apron, which kind of unlocks a future first round pick. They're not below that quite yet. But Dan, the player that Anfernee Simons brings to that system, I think makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, the idea of give me a guy who is a super accurate, quick trigger, high volume 3-point shooter in Joe Mazzulla ball, like that's a hand in glove fit, right? Especially you figure like the Celtics, we saw what that offense can look like without Jason Tatum, and it can be touch and go, right? Like he has been such a consistent engine of everything they do offensively year in and year out. They are not going to have him next year. And it remains to be seen what additional moves are going to be made there. But I think it's reasonable to presume you're probably going to try to keep Jaylen Brown and Derek White, unless you get bowled over with an offer there. So if you're going to kind of have a timeshare with those two guys handling the ball more, you don't necessarily need Anfernee Simons to be a primary ball handler, shot creator, running all the pick and rolls, right? You can have him be an off-ball player. You can have him be a floor spacer or running off pin downs and secondary actions, coming off dribble handoffs, all that kind of stuff. And the way he can shoot off the catcher, off the bounce, feels like a really snug fit for what they're going to need as somebody to like soak up usage, soak up shot opportunities. And just like with the like neon green light that you imagine Joe Mazzulla is going to be, you know, put in for him in Boston, like that feels pretty, it feels like a really nice fit there. And then like, as we mentioned, sort of this is the positive spin of the Blazers maybe looking at it and saying, if we don't know that we feel confident in what Anthony Simons is going to be for us moving forward, it's better for us to make a move now and move off him than like risk losing him for nothing in free agency. The Celtics basically get to look at it and say, here's a year of data of what he looks like in our system. Do we think that this translates to whatever the version of our team is when we have Jason Tatum back? Do we think he's maybe like a high-end third or fourth option on that team? Or do we think that maybe the defensive liabilities or some of the concerns that we've got there make him somebody that we don't want to keep around long-term? Well, you got a dice roll. You got an opportunity to figure it out over the course of the next year. You have his bird rights to be able to either extend him or, you know, offer him more than anybody else in free agency next summer. Or you can walk away and say like that coming off our books helps us as we try to continue lowering our overall, you know, luxury tax liability and getting, you know, dealing with the aprons moving forward for whatever the next competitive iteration of this team is going to be. I think that, like, in the context of the Celtics as they exist right now, this feels like the first step in the larger project of chop down that bill, get under the luxury tax. I think we're still continuing to keep an eye on Kristaps Porzingis. We're still continuing to keep an eye on Sam Hauser. You know, the Celtics are going to continue to be open for business. And then if they do hang on to Anthony Simons heading into the season, if they don't reroute him in something else, some other kind of deal, I think it'll be interesting to see, like, how competitive Boston is next season. Because, like, they are part of that chaos in the top of the East. They could also be a benefactor, or they could also benefit them if the other teams are still, you know, falling by the wayside, and they still have the core of a continually competitive group, and Simons can elevate that offense a little bit. Like, who knows what their postseason possibilities look like next season? So, like, I think it's an interesting variable to introduce into their structure there in Boston. But I think that it's like cost savings and apron management and roster management, you know, like flexibility first, and then, like, basketball wise could be an interesting move for Boston too.
He's a great shooter, man. He's great
shooter,
off the
yeah.
bounce and deep threes. He learned under the best in Damian Lillard and the logo threes, logo Lillard. He's one of the guys that over the last couple of years, as I've been doing those games, he gets doubled so much, and so much of the attack in the pick and roll, they would just swarm him because the defenses were like, we're going to make other guys on the team beat you. And that's not going to be the case when you got Jaylen Brown and Derek White on the other side. And who knows what they're going to do with Kristaps Porzingis, Al Horford, but they just have a lot more weapons to kind of proof that, like, double proof and blitz proof Anthony Simons in ways that was a little bit more challenging for the Blazers. So, like, he's a great shooter. I think the Celtics are just going to give him, like you said, the greenest of green lights. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if he took, like, a Anthony Edwards volume of three-pointers next season, because what do you have to lose? The guy can shoot off the bounce. He's got a beautiful three-point shot, and Missoula ball offense, he's going to get 12, 13 threes a game. I'm pretty sure of that. So it's a flyer for them. Is like, hey, we got him on an expiring deal, like you said, Bird rights. And if it doesn't work out, you can probably flip him at the deadline to a team like Orlando. He's from Orlando. And maybe if Orlando's like, yeah, we still need more offense, I think he is going to provide value. If it's not going to be the Celtics, he can also be moved at the deadline for the Celtics too. So there's optionality on that as well. I think, to me, this is also just big picture, Dan, really important to hit. The Denver Nuggets won the title, and then they were like, yeah, KCP, we're just going to let you go to Orlando. The Boston Celtics have that Jason Tatum injury, and then they're like, yeah, we're going to shed salary here in Drew Holiday and perhaps Kristaps Porzingis. The staying power of these champions is the shelf life is not very long at all. And I don't want to totally ascribe this to the CBA. I think a lot of this has to do with the injuries that happened to Jason Tatum, but it does feel like OKC going forward, this is another thing where they can just be like, yeah, I mean, we're going to have a really good shot at a dynasty here, because the Boston Celtics last year were perhaps our biggest competition in starting what seemed to be championship contention over the next 5 years. And now Boston is kind of not waving the white flag, but I think this is a gap year move in trading for Anthony Simons and saying, we're taking a flyer on this guy. He's coming into his prime. He's one of the elite 3-point shooters off the bounce in the NBA. And in our system, he's going to excel. And we'll see what we get in terms of the tax and the second apron. It's going to be a little bit tricky to try to extend him long-term, but man, people weren't thinking big things about Derek White in Boston until they got him into that system. And now he's one of the best two-way guys in the league. Not saying Anthony Simons is going to be a two-way guy,
sure,
but just right. Put him in Missoula's system and maximize that talent. This could end up really, really nice for the Boston Celtics, but yeah, it's going to be tough to see that the Celtics have already dismantled that championship core a little bit sooner than people expected. But with Jason Tatum, unfortunately, it's a harsh reality in today's NBA. So yeah, a very surprising trade. I will say that, Dan, And we expect to have a lot more coming in the next 48 hours as we lead up into the NBA draft.
Goes and goes.
Yeah, it goes. Never stops. This is the NBA. It's gonna keep going. By the time this ends, like, our producers have not told us that there's a blockbuster trade, but I feel like as soon as we hang up here in a couple moments, it's gonna happen, right?
Don't say
it's
that.
It's gonna happen, Dan.
Oh no, I gotta go to the grocery store. We can't do any emergency shows. We gotta all right, wrap us up, Tom. Get us out of here.
Yeah, so that's a big number. Drew Holiday for Anthony Simons, our four contenders for next year, an early look ahead at the 26th NBA championship. Congrats to the Oklahoma City Thunder, the OKC Dobermans. Sorry to see the Indiana Pacers. That's right, I said Pacers.
You did.
An amazing season from them. Yes, sirs. It is heartbreaking to see the Tyrese Halliburton injury. And one note on that, I forgot to mention this earlier. I looked this up after the game. We had talked about the Indiana Pacers and how much they had passed the ball to win these games and how much more they were passing than OKC. Without Tyrese Halliburton for the majority of that game, the Thunder actually had more passes in Game 7 than the Indiana Pacers.
Wow.
They had 269 for the Pacers, and the Thunder had 272, three passes more than the Pacers. Just to give you an idea of the impact of that injury, just completely changed the way that they played basketball in that game. So, Dan, this was an amazing year. I love doing the big number with you this year. We had a lot of fun doing it. Some improv, some scat, some Big Pimpin' Jay-Z lyrics. That was just A-plus work by you. This was a really fun year. So thanks so much for doing this, Dan. And also to our team behind the scenes, Stone, Emmy, Mike, the entire squad behind the scenes. Thanks so much for making this podcast and this show a reality. Please watch The Big Number on YouTube, subscribe on all of the platforms, rate us 5 stars, go tell your friends. We'll be back next week with another episode of The Big Number. Until then,